Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, looky, 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 it is another brand new edition of The Horn. It is a little bit past, about a minute and a half past the hour on this 26th day of April, 2017, and we find ourselves at midweek. Midweek, downhill to Friday, hump day, and yes, prayer meeting Wednesday on The Horn. No getting around it. That's what we've got here. Yes. And if, of course, you would like to be part of the online congregation in the real-time multimedia madcap zany wacky extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, well, just wander on by headonradionetwork.com and pick yourself up a password and a screen name and jump right in. And you'll be met by Jug of Punch and Richard and VT Blom and Anatole. And golly, at some point in time, I suspect that midweek utility horn chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan will be along as well. Okay. So thank you very kindly for wandering by to those who are already there. We stand not upon ceremony. And folks can wander into the chat room as they please. They come and go pretty much during the course of the program. Sometimes I just put them to sleep and their head falls down and they accidentally kick themselves out of the room. It's been known to happen. Yes, absolutely. As noted, I've ruined meals, put people to sleep. God knows. Absolutely, God knows. God knows, get it, Prayer Meeting Wednesday, right? Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. This is a listener-supported broadcast operation. We started out the program with a $330 fundraising deficit, knocked down to $330 by Janice. And thank you, Bob. Thank you very kindly, Bob in Texas, for taking a big bite out of that just right here, right now. Thank you very much indeed. Hopefully the good news will continue as the program continues. Yes, if you would like to help us keep the program on the air, and well, this is how we do it because there aren't any ads. We don't have 100 minutes of ads in 180 minutes of programming here. Cuz we're not trying to sell you anything. The only thing we're trying to do is foster dialogue and discussion. And thoughtfulness, mindfulness, as we plumb the depths of Republican right-wing, white-wing, birth or death or ninth or tenth or bagger, booger-eater, Trumpansie depravity. Yes. That's what we do. And we do it through friendly, kind conversation. Sometimes funny, sometimes angry, but at all times, wingnut free. There are no right wingers, white wingers allowed here at any time, except for like sock puppet made-up right-wing emails like we had last week. And yeah, it was fun, but it was just a little too easy to sort of see through the facade. Yes. Hillbilly pronunciation, facade. Oh, by the way, a little note on pronunciations. I had a note from Sylvia last night. And Sylvia wanted to know, it was a particular pronunciation question. And as I've said before, if one person asks, that odds are that means that others have asked as well. Sylvia wrote, good program content tonight, Bob, but it kept cutting in and out. Sorry about that. I saw weirdness over on the interface. Yes, there was some buffering, but one of the weird things I saw was buffering on the input side, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Unless, like, the streaming computer is getting ready to go to its long home and its long reward or whatever, be sent over to some mountain of electronic parts somewhere in China to be deconstructed by a 7-year-old kid, you know, making pennies per day. Pennies per day story coming up, by the way. I hope that's not what it means. I really, really do hope that's not what it means. But yeah, we had some buffering issues, and Sylvia wasn't the only one. But Sylvia wanted me to clarify my pronunciation of Monongahela. And I hope I did an adequate job, and I was kind of guessing, but this is one of those things, if you want people to not look at you and go, foreigner, flatlander, then you need to know that, yes, the Monongahela River. Or is it, I don't know, is it because I say Hela and not Gila? And it's always been the Monongahela to me. The Monongahela River rises in north-central West Virginia and flows north. Why? Pittsburgh sucks. Old West Virginia University joke, that. But it rises in north-central West Virginia, and it flows north to join the Allegheny River at Pittsburgh and form the Ohio. That's the river. On the other hand, when the hillbillies were sent packing off to Richmond to found the new county where Morgantown is, right there on the Pennsylvania line, they did not send their spelling bee champion with them. And so consequently, what was supposed to be Monongahela County turned out to be Monongalia County, M-O-N-O-N-G-A-L-I-A, Monongalia, as opposed to Monongahela, M-O-N-O-N-G-A-H-E-L-A. So it's the Monongahela River, but Monongalia County. No, you're West Virginia. Yes. Sylvia also notes, I love the food porn. I'm a retired homemaking teacher, and I'm very interested in foods and where they come from. Well, I I'm that way too. One of my particular hang-ups is to ponder the impact of the Columbian Exchange on the cuisines of the rest of the world. Things like tomatoes, potatoes, maize, you call it corn, chili peppers, squash, beans. Yeah. All of those things. And pumpkins, you know. I remember, like I've said before, I remember sitting down at an Afghan restaurant in Washington, D.C., over in the Adams Morgan area, and ordering up something that was said to be the longtime traditional historic national dish of Afghanistan. Son of a bitch, it wasn't made out of pumpkins. And I remember sitting, it was quite tasty, really. It was very good. But I remember thinking, well, this can't have been the national dish for much more than 250, 300 years. 500 tops. Before that, who knows what the national dish was. But it didn't have any pumpkin in it. So food origins and things like that are deeply fascinating to me too, Sylvia. And obviously to other members of the Horn family community congregation. Uh, Randy with a note, what are the liberals like you going to do when Trump nixes net neutrality and liberals are reduced to a 300 baud stream? I don't know. Stand out on the stoop and scream? I'm not trying to be a smartass. But it's one of those we'll know when we get there kind of things. Randy's referring to the fact that that right-wingers, being, you know, the assholes that they are getting ready to go to war with net neutrality. In particular, the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission has released his plan to wipe out net neutrality rules. I need to do some more reading on that to get the bigger picture. Yeah. Thank you to Andy the Angry Jew for jumping in this evening and helping us knock things down. We are now down to $180 in fundraising to go this evening. That's a great opening start. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. And hopefully we can knock out the rest of that, and that'll mean that we've only got $400 to go to wipe out the rest of the month of April and lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky. Cool? Yes. Very. All right. It is Wednesday. It is prayer meeting Wednesday. And that means we've got lots and lots of stuff to deal with. And oh my God. you might want to get the brain bleach handy, let alone the hockey pucks and the rest of it. It's well, we're going to be busy. So, let me just tell you that it has been we had a lovely meatloaf dinner in the Cathedral of Common Sense Fellowship Hall down in the basement. The little old blue-haired ladies outdid themselves again. You know, sometimes something just homey and comfortable like meatloaf just hits the spot. And, you know, they don't stuff it full of breadcrumbs. I mean, this is meaty stuff. I had a lovely cup of celery-flavored yogurt for dinner. And then I had a cup of peach yogurt for dessert. But I'm told the meatloaf was wonderful. Chopped up little hunks of bell pepper and onions and little cherry tomatoes diced into it with the sausage and the... Oh, it was yummy. It was yummy. And they cheat, the little blue-haired ladies. Instead of using ketchup on top of the meatloaf, they use hoisin sauce. And it really, really does make a big difference. And then there was the mashed potatoes and the carrot salad. And yes, not everybody got a cup of peach yogurt for dessert, no. The deacons trundled their way, their massive bulk, up to the dessert table and wiped out, with no effort whatsoever, 10, count 'em, 10 homemade pecan pies. Oh, it was like something out of a biblical curse, out of Genesis, and locusts landing on the barley fields of Pharaoh. I mean, it just and they were gone up the stairs, two flights, where they went to stand in the parking lot and smoke with the sinners. I watch them sometimes from the office. And I can tell you that that they went through. I saw one deacon light 6 cigarettes, one off the other, just trying to get the nicotine fix in to get him through 3 hours of prayer meeting Wednesday. But sooner or later, it's bound to happen, and it happened, and it was a lovely, lovely day here in Appalachistan, and that meant that the solar-powered cattle prod could sit out in the sun and just charge up real good, and it was humming and crackling when Sister Carol Baker came to the vestibule door and just sort of waved it in the air, and the deacons turned and run, and they blew past Sister Carol Baker, past that bowl of desiccating butter mints, right down the center aisle, and they're waiting here, brother and sister, and waiting right here for us, right now, for me to bring up the minister of music, so as we can have the offertory, and get prayer meeting Wednesday going right. Since we're down to only $180 fundraising, I'm not gonna lock the doors. That means we won't have to replace the carpet, and y'all can feel free and easy. Y'all can feel free and easy about enjoying the sweet iced tea. Okay. Yeah. So let's bring up, and remember, with every head bowed and every eye closed, except the one you keep scrunched open, so you don't get cronked in the head with the big old heavy brass velvet lined offering plate with the PayPal button in the bottom. If you can't use the plate, just go to headonradionetwork.com and click on contribute, and the PayPal interface is there. Thank you to our our buddy Reggie for becoming a subscriber. Click on that little box. I think he was going for $6.66, but it wound up being $6.67. Thank you very kindly indeed. So, oh dear, that means we're down to $173.37. $173.37. Thank you very kindly. If you'd like to become a subscriber, oh, Mr. Soros. Yeah, you click that box, Mr. Soros. Put about 10,000. You know what? No, why be parsimonious? Put 100,000 in there, and then I'll be able to. We'll be able to do things like hire Ben Birch to just full time sit there and watch every individual packet as it passes. Mr. Soros, you know, the Horn community's been carrying you on their backs and the rest of the limousine liberals for a very long time now. It's your turn. So everybody else just do what you want, but Mr. Soros, it's time to step up. It really is. And so the deacons will be moving amongst you. And just head bowed, eye closed, eye scrunched open, don't get hurt. As we bring the minister of music forward, glory, amen, hallelujah. Brother minister of music, if you would please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say,
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sistren. Hap glory. Welcome. Welcome to Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I'm a-calling upon you now, brethren and sistren. I'm a-calling on you. You never know when you'll hear the call again. I'm a-calling upon you, brethren and sistren, to get up out of your seats and get onto your feet. Weeble and wiggle and wobble. And get out from betwixt the pews, and be careful not to get too personal as you're getting out toward the aisle. And come on down that blood-red aisle and fall, sinner, upon your knees at the altar. And lay out, amen, glory, your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense of flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Bob Kincaid, and it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the horn. Glory! Hallelujah. Amen. Oh, brethren and sistren, we have real tales, real accounts of genuine faith to bolster us and carry us forward across the buffeting winds of sin and perversion this evening. We do. We truly, truly do. Brethren and sistren, you may recall we had a little discussion a couple of days ago about Virginia gubernatorial Republican candidate Corey Allen Stewart, who is no kin of Brother Deacon Gerald. No, Corey, we're talking about Republican, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual, gundamentalist, Corey Stewart of South Duluth, Minnesota, who is terrible, terrible upset. Oh, he was wroth the other day, and I misspoke. The Robert E. Lee statue is not in Richmond. I'm sure they got one, but the one that's coming down is the one in Charlottesville, Virginia, yes. And Corey Stewart is just getting upsetter and upsetter. If he gets any more upset, his wife is liable to have to give him a julep with one of those little Thorazine pills in it just to calm him down. Now, God only knows how he wound up being the chairman at large of the Prince William Board of County Supervisors, but he is. But a day or so after he found out, after I told y'all, which was yesterday, about the monument to white supremacy and denial of civil rights coming down in New Orleans, Louisiana. Well, Corey Stewart, who is on the Facebook at Corey Stewart VA, even got him a little blue check mark and everything. That must mean he bought himself a million followers or something. Well, he too saw the video of the removal of the white supremacy monument in New Orleans. And he was deeply troubled, brethren and sistren. How glory he was. He tweeted, "It appears ISIS." Well, I don't know. Does he talk like that? "It appears ISIS has won. They are tearing down historical monuments in New Orleans now, too. It must end. Despicable." Well, that was how very deplorable of you to say that, Corey. He has in the past compared the removal, people who want to remove monuments to racism and slavery, to those who wanted to remove the statue to tyrants. No, it doesn't quite work that. Well, they're tyrants and Nazis is what they are. The people who want to remove the monuments to white supremacy and suppression of civil rights, the people that want to remove, they're tyrants and Nazis. Yeah, and I don't know. I didn't see that goofy flag with the funny writing across it or nothing anywhere in New Orleans, but ISIS has won in New Orleans, according to good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual defender of the whole South. South Duluth. Corey Stewart. Yes. Mm-hmm. And of course, it would not... Speaking of ISIS... It would not be a prayer meeting Wednesday if we didn't have a little something from America's favorite purveyor of food in a bucket. Jim Baker. "Oh, I think that's hardly fair, Laurel." Laurel says, "We Minnesotans will take back Corey Stewart if you West Virginians take back Charles Manson." Well, we can't hardly do that. What do you want us to do? Go bust him out of San Quentin? That sets up a rather unfulfillable condition precedent, I think, and therefore is void on its face. But I get the gist. Maybe we could send him to Australia with Ken Ham. I'll be getting a note from Robert any minute now. Not on your life. Sorry. You keep him. We don't want him. No, it wouldn't be prayer meeting Wednesday without Jim Baker. There's always, if you ask Jim Baker, there's always a good reason to buy some bucket pudding, which just sounds like something dirty. It really, really does. But that, you know, bucket pudding and bucket soup. Yes. So there he was talking with End Times pastor John Shorey. You know how you get to be an End Times pastor? You say, "Hi, I are a End Times pastor. I are tax exempt. Give me money." And End Times pastor John Shorey has figured out the ISIS. He has. Yes. We'll cut to the audio.
The tribulation has begun, John. Yeah. Am I right? In the Mideast?
Absolutely.
What would you call their heads being cut off?
I'd call it decapitation. Not a good reason to buy a bucket of pudding, but, you know, that's me. And by the way, there used to be an old joke about, please don't tell my mother I'm a lawyer. She thinks I'm a piano player in a whorehouse. What pathetic individual is earning their daily bread by tinkling the ivories in the background of Jim Baker's heartfelt exhortations to buy a bucket of $1,600 pudding? Yeah, these are the things that trouble my sleep. I'm sorry, the star.
They're out in the hills, thrown out of their homes, their warmth of their house. Mm-hmm. It's happening.
The Muslim.
Now wait a minute. Okay, I'm sorry. I know it drives you crazy when I stop the clip like that, but damn it. Now I'm not going to interrupt here. I want to get the full context of it, because unless I'm mistaken, these are people what ain't got no noggins that have been thrown out of their homes and are living in the hills.
Am I right? In the Mideast?
Absolutely.
What would you call their heads being cut off? They're out in the hills, thrown out of their homes, their warmth of their house. Mm-hmm. It's happening.
Talk about the hills have eyes. And ears, tongues, nostrils. Just no shoulders or arms. It's bad enough what's going on. Without an old felon like Jim Baker out there, they cut off their heads and then they have to live in the hills. Well, living in the hills isn't so bad, Jim, as long as they're not blowing the hills up, but that's just me, and I'm a hillbilly, so I'm probably biased.
The Muslims in the Middle East want to kill every Christian in those countries, and the day is coming where they'll want to do it in this country.
Well, hold on a minute. Last I checked, the Muslims were, the ISIS was Muslim, and the ISIS was a head lopping of other Muslims. Just like our friends, the Saudis, our partners in peace, otherwise known as the good head loppers, lop the heads off of other Muslims. Because sometimes it's the only way you can get them to listen. I guess. I don't know. But apparently those headless people who are living in the hills now, those are all Christians. And they're coming for you, according to End Times pastor John Shorey. Hey, Mr. Shorey, what do you do? I'm an End Times pastor. What do you got to do to be an End Times pastor, Pastor Shorey? Say you're an End Times pastor.
Want to.
And our country our country won't wake up.
Right.
We have stood on the side.
Wait a minute! I thought we were all woke AF. Now that we got Comrade Kumquat for our president. I thought we all woke AF on November the 8th, right? When we stopped Hillary Clinton. Oh my God, Hillary Clinton! Jesus Christ, Benghazi! From becoming president and making us all become Muslim Sharia law followers. Apparently there is no pleasing Jim Baker.
Of our enemies the last few years.
Right.
More than we have stood on the side.
That's right.
Of God's
people. I heard Mark when we was back mm-hmm. in the green room today, and he was telling me that in Europe, where the Muslims are taking over the nations, mm-hmm. the average birth rate is 8 kids per family.
Yes, right.
They're literally taken over by native-born Muslims because that's their strategy.
Well, wait a damn minute, okay? I thought y'all was all about the precious little fetuses. I thought y'all wanted all kinds of babies getting all borned up. Oh, just white Christian babies. Got it. They're outbreeding the white folk. Do you realize how old those coloreds are outbreeding the white folk trope is? 500 years? Ever since the concept of race was invented? Ever since slavery was imposed? I mean, your slave owners in the New World, they were in a quandary. They had a conundrum because on the one hand, when your slaves made little baby slaves, that meant you had somebody else that you could sell and make money off of, or work and make money off of. On the other hand, it was hard not to look down in the quarters and realize there's a whole lot more of them than there was of you. This, of course, led to deep and abiding paranoia that lives in this country to this day. But that's how they're doing it in Europe. They're baby making. They're baby making for Aller. Yes. And meanwhile, the white Europeans, they don't want fuck anymore. They don't want to make babies. They want their abortions and their pills and their condoms and they don't want to make good little European babies. Meanwhile, just so you'll know, this does not withstand statistical analysis. It's been taken apart piece by piece by piece. No, there is no way for the Muslims to outbreed the Europeans and thereby take over the Europe so the ISIS can cut everybody's head off and make them live in the hills. I guess that would be the Alps or the Teutoburgerwald or Mont Blanc or maybe Scotland or something. Yeah.
Muslims in kilts, goddamn.
Is that have a plan.
The world is the most serious mess it's ever been in. It's just, it is there. Mm-hmm. And it's coming apart.
Yeah.
Wow. The world's in the most serious mess it's ever been in. 1938? Nope. Wasn't a serious mess. How about wiping out one third of the Europe and most of Asia's population via the Black Death? Just a blip on the radar. I mean, just, no. Yeah, the most. You know, the only way a Jim Baker can succeed is if he gets to talk to a lot of people who are a lot more stupid than even he is. And guess what? They exist in this country in rich abundance.
And we better prepare. We better be ready.
Yeah.
Wow, you better be ready for when the Muslims show up. Gosh, Jim Baker, how can we possibly be ready for when ISIS takes over America? Tell us, please.
These people are starving to death. Yeah. What's going to happen to America if we let our enemies take over our country?
Yeah.
And they have worked hard.
Yeah, we've tried
to get our enemies put into. Our country has really worked hard to get our enemies. We've appointed them to offices. They're in areas of government now.
They're already in.
And
they're embedded.
And the people are laughing.
Yeah.
And mocking. Mm-hmm. And not realizing that.
Well, what am I supposed to do except laugh and mock when Jim Baker says there's people that have had their heads cut off who are living in the hills? I can only assume that they must be Republicans, because those are the only human beings that can live without a goddamn brain.
America's, it's later than you think.
It is.
It's time to be ready. You can order, if you can't get the 7 years, which is actually 9.5 years today.
Yeah.
You can get the year of food for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only, what, $400?
Yeah, thanks, Right Wing Watch. We love you. $2,800, it gets you, apparently, 9 years of food. As I think has been noted on this program, if everything is as bad as what he says it's going to be, you don't want to be around for a year, let alone nine of them. And if you've got a basement full of bucket food, when the ravening Muslim hordes come, that's just going to make your place more attractive to them, isn't it? Oh, wait. I bet they make sure that the bucket food is not halal, or is halal. I can't keep it. Anyway, I bet they add a little something to make sure that Muslims can't eat it. Even though I'm sure there's dispensations for being able to eat stuff that you're not supposed to eat in times of extremis. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. But you heard that business about how the Muslims are out ficky-ficking all the good God-fearing decent white people. Well, that's not just some goofy crap that you hear in the middle of a pitch for you to buy a whole bunch of bucket supper. No, over on that radio network of that website that rhymes with light and fart. Lo and behold, ancient, why isn't he dead yet, Republican zombie Pat Buchanan showed up. Duct tape. Yes, check. Hockey puck, check. Good to go.
Nixon undertook a counterattack on the media when they trashed his Great Silent Majority speech in 1969. This, I think, if you're 31, was probably before you were born. But let me say this. That was a great battle back in 1969, but at the end of 1969, Richard Nixon was at 68% approval and 19% disapproval, and Spiro T. Agnew, whose speech in Des Moines just savaging the networks as unelected elites imposing their agenda on the nation, was the third most admired man in the world.
Okay, so you heard all that. What does that tell you about America? That silent majority dog whistle bullshit was pure, unmitigated, unvarnished racism. And Spiro T. Agnew was a freaking criminal. Of course, so was Nixon. Just for those of you looking for a little bit of historical perspective in the middle of the nightmare that is Donald J. Trump, it's not like we haven't been here before, okay? You can fool a lot of the people all of the time, or however it is that saying goes. You can fool some of the people all the time and all of the people some of the time. You can't fool all the people all the time. Well, you don't need them all. You just need to sandpaper them real good and then turpentine them with a little bit of racism and white terror.
America. Now, if you stood up in those days and made these statements and said what you believed, you could find tremendous echoes out in America. And that is what some of the new media, conservative media, have discovered. They've been very successful they've been created basically in recent years. I remember speaking with Mr. Murdoch about Fox when he was just starting it up. I mean, these were ideas that we had back in the 60s, was creating a conservative media and conservative institutions. And it was sort of the beginning. But look, it is, it's not a bad thing to be out there, you know, be out there on the lines in the earliest days of the cause, and then to see many of these ideas succeed.
Now, Pat Buchanan, you are known as a pessimist around Washington, someone who doesn't think necessarily this American...
No, no, Pat Buchanan's known as an asshole around Washington, but never mind.
An experiment has a lot left to go before it starts winding down. And talk to us about the Trump election, the first 100 days of Trump, and your evaluation of the president so far. And does it make you more optimistic, or are you going back to being more pessimistic?
Well, I'm a historical pessimist in the sense that if you go back and look at the great arc of history...
And he's also a historical Nazi insofar as he gets up out of bed every morning and goose steps to the bathroom to brush his teeth, but never mind.
In Western civilization, and you see it's an extraordinary accomplishment, and the fact that the West once really ruled the world, and now the West itself is being colonized and invaded by folks from its former colonies who are changing the character of Western civilization.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wish you hadn't done all that colonizing, doesn't it, Pat? No, no, of course not. And of course, no one in Europe is being colonized. This is a response to a refugee crisis that, of course, was, you know, caused by those same colonizing European nations not being being entirely capable of screwing up a one-car funeral, one-car parade, what have you. You get the idea.
And frankly, who disregard many of the traditions and things that that we have built, it is hard to be an overall optimist. But in the terms of the shorter term, I was elated with Donald Trump's election because he ran on these issues, you know, of preserving the nation, securing its borders, preserving its independence out of this new world order, getting out of all these third world wars and the rest of it, that I thought were really best for my country. I think he's making an effort, and there's been some stumbles, obviously, in the first early days, but...
Notice how it's his country, not ours? I couldn't... I mean, that just kind of grabbed me. My country, not our country. Because, you know, if he says our country, that might include some people... well, not a skin color of which Pat Buchanan, you know, approves.
I'm delighted that I voted the way I did, that I supported him and his causes, and I wish him well. And in the longer term, I mean, if you take a look at the, let's just take a look at the demographic change taking place in Europe. Europe, there's not, as I wrote in Death of the West almost 20 years ago, there's not a single European country that has a birth rate that is going to enable it to replace its native born. And
is there anybody within the sound of my voice who would be surprised if the next word out of his mouth was Lebensraum? If you want to see this this whole notion of wrong coloreds outscrewing the good white people completely disassembled. There is there's an article at The Economist, economist.com, and it's easy to find. Just look for fecund, F-E-C-U-N-D, fecund foreigners. And the subhead on it is, immigrants do less to raise birth rates than is generally believed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you go and you read something like that, it can be beneficial, because this stuff's, I mean, from Jim Baker to Pat Buchanan, and they're both saying the same thing. The angry Indian points out he's been saying this crapola for years. The MSM still pays him for his hateful opinion. He's down to doing Breitbart radio, but still, you know, glory call. but nobody in Europe has a birthright.
It's especially true on the Mediterranean coast. And as these places empty out, you have new people who come from destitute countries across the Med and from the Middle East who are going to cross the Med into Europe. And I don't see the national will there to stop this invasion. I see a lot of blue sky talk about how wonderful it's going to be. But let's just say, I'm not optimistic.
Poor guy. He's not. And as Carol Baker points out, April 30th is the 62nd anniversary of the death of Adolf Hitler. You have to cut Pat some slack. He's mourning the death of his personal hero. Absolutely. I'm surprised he didn't break into paroxysms of sobbing in the midst of that clip. But God, it gets old. It does get so old. And of course, it would not be prayer meeting Wednesday without a visit from the old former liquor supply officer, now would it? Of course not.
I can't understand why a United States president, who cares about a deal with Iran? Why would we go to such lengths? And why would we give them secret data and allow them to get technology which could be used to destroy America? I mean, what kind of weirdness was running this government of ours? Were they trying to destroy America? I mean, it looks like if you set out a program of what you wanted to do to make America weak, America disabled, America deeply in debt, and America crippled before its enemies, you couldn't have been more successful than the program that was laid out by Obama over those 8 years. And now they're talking about what a wonderful man he was. Give me a break.
I think we may need some commentary on this. Professor Spicoli?
You dick!
That's what I thought. Let's see. Why would we even want to enter into a deal with Iran? Well, the stated purpose was to keep them from developing a nuclear device in the next 4 to 5 years, which is what they were on track to do. This pushed that back, hopefully buying time to talk them out of wanting a nuclear device. Not that I personally think that's going to be successful, because there's no time anywhere in the near future that Pakistan, who hates Iran's guts, is going to stop having nuclear devices. And India, who hates Iran's guts, is going to stop having nuclear devices. And Israel, who hates Iran's guts, is going to stop having nuclear devices. And, well, then the noble, majestic graciousness of the serene house of the royal loveliness of Ibn Saud, our partners in peace, who, of course, can get the United States to do untold amounts of damage merely by snapping their fingers. So, no, I'd say I'm just a teensy-tiny bit skeptical about that. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, the former liquor supply officer's apparently been into the stash, because he's convinced that, well, you know, you kind of have to be. I mean, that Obama, he looked like some of them people. And you know how it is. They all stick together. Right. And as Brother Deacon Asa points out, apparently controlling the White House, both houses of Congress, and the judiciary isn't enough consolidated power for these right-wing fuckwads to stop howling at the moon about that one in the White House. Oh, no, no, they haven't gotten over it by... Because, one, he whipped their ass in 2008. Two, he whipped their ass in 2012, which means that he whipped their ass twice. And, no, they're not likely to get over that anytime soon. And so the perfect run of whiteness in American presidents was forever ruined. See how it is? Yeah. But listen, it's not all about ISIS and overbreeding Muslims. No. Will no one speak up for that martyr to manliness, Bill O'Reilly?
So apparently Bill O'Reilly's out. And I have to tell you, if they can get rid of Bill O'Reilly, they can get rid of anyone. This is another modern day lynching. This is a modern day lynching of a straight Christian conservative white male of power. That's all this is about, folks. White males with power, of power, are under attack. The straight white male of power is the only thing that's keeping the country hanging on. You get rid of them, it's over. And that's what the children of the lie are working desperately trying to do.
Now, say what you will, I personally think Jesse Lee Peterson there had gotten into a little bit of the sacramental wine, if you hear the slurring, and the children of the liar, if you do. That, of course, was Jesse Lee Peterson, who is truly a bizarre human being. He is, among other things, a radical misogynist, and he is he's an African American man. He's an African American pastor, right? What made me know that I would be hearing from the Angry Indian about Jesse Lee Peterson? Fuck this, Uncle Tom SOB. He also thanked white people for African slavery. Look on YouTube. Oh, I don't have to. I'm well aware. But see, I just want to make clear here, I probably don't have to, but I want to. Bill O'Reilly got paid $25 million to just go away. Can anybody find me a victim of actual lynching who got even $15 to just leave town? No. Jesse Lee Peterson throws around the word lynching like it me, like some people throw around the word neoliberal or ponerize. Bill O'Reilly was not found with his body burnt to a cinder hanging from a tree. Nobody took pictures of white people or black people having picnic lunches under Bill O'Reilly's burnt, hanged body in the tree. Nobody celebrated burning and hanging the body of Bill O'Reilly. No, Bill O'Reilly got $25 million to go somewhere and creeper on women on somebody besides Fox News Corp's dime. That's all that happened. But good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian Jesse Lee Peterson says Bill O'Reilly was lynched. Really makes me sick to see, to hear things like that. I guess I'm just surprised that Jesse Lee Peterson didn't say something like, you know, because it's this is the week of the Holocaust Remembrance, if I'm correct. I guess we're just lucky that Jesse Lee Peterson didn't say that Bill O'Reilly was a walking Holocaust. Merciful God. What a nightmare. And not a damn thing you can do about it. He minimizes the countless thousands of victims of lynching with a remark like that. He erases them. He urinates on them. He defecates on their history. But it's okay, because it's all tax-free for Jesse Lee Peterson. And he gets to hide behind the skirts of the First Amendment while he preaches his poison, while he pours vitriol all over the body politic of our country. Not my country. Our country. So here endeth the lesson. If you'd like to involve yourself in the conversation, I heartily welcome you so to do. You're welcome to jump in. The stress line is area code 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. The other line, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, and from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've never done it before, if you've never connected via Skype before, just send me a contact request, and we'll get up and running in a straight up hurry. We've got $173 and 63 cents. No. $173.33 to go in fundraising for the evening. The plate will continue to pass. The doors to the sanctuary are not locked. No need to pee on the carpet. Just keep it passing, and hopefully we'll fill the plate up before the evening's out, and have a fighting chance of finishing April where we need to be, and licking the Lithuanian and nudging the Norsky. Okay? Okay. And so we've got a long-distance dedication going out to you, Bill O'Reilly, you poor lynching victim, you. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sitting in a tiny table in a ritzy restaurant. She was staring at her coffee cup. He was trying to keep his courage up by applying booze. Talk was small and they talked at all. They both knew what they wanted. There was no need to talk about it. They were old enough to scope it out and keep it loose. She said, "You don't look like my type, but I guess you'll do." Third-rate romance, low-rent rendezvous. He said, "I'll even tell you that I love you if you want me to."
And they left the bar, they got in his car, and they drove away. He drove to the family inn. She didn't even have to pretend she didn't know what for. Then he went to the desk and made his request while she waited outside. And he came back with the key. And she said, give it to me and I'll unlock the door. She kept saying, I've never really done this kind of thing before. Have you? Yes, I have, but only a time or two. Third-rate romance, low-rate rendezvous. Third-rate romance, low-rate rendezvous. Third-rate romance, low-rate
She said, I've really never done this kind of thing before, and I still don't want to with you. Oh, I'm sorry. The little song parody was just writing itself in my head as it played through. Mm-hmm. An otherwise wonderful song by an otherwise wonderful band, The Amazing Rhythm Aces, Third Rate Romance. Right up there with Lipstick Traces, which is another... Never mind. It's 6 minutes past the hour on this prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. We've still got some other prayer meeting material with which we need to deal. This one's a little troubling. Might prove a little troublesome. You tell me. I kind of wish Texas Tea was handy. Because we might get a little bit more perspective. But anyway, the mayor of San Antonio, Texas, is Ivy Taylor. She's a woman of color. Not that it matters. But she, back in April, she and fellow candidate Ron Nirenberg were at a mayoral forum, and the director of San Antonio's Christian Resource Center asked her a question. What do you see as the deepest systemic causes of generational poverty in San Antonio? Now that's a serious question. And the mayor, Ivy Taylor, acknowledged as much. She said it had some heft to it. Generational poverty. That's poverty that goes. It's not just that your mom and daddy are poor, or grandma and grandpa are poor. They pass on their poorness to mama and daddy, and they pass on their poorness to the babies. And everybody just stays poor. Generational poverty. We know a little bit about that here in the hills. If you take the question seriously, it turns into a list, and it goes from being a list to sort of being an interconnected sphere, if you will. It's tough to grasp and tough to graph. If you're a Republican, on the other hand, you just say, well, that's because, you know, they're poor. They're poor people. Poor people are going to be poor. Unless, you know, unless the God of Calvinism puts his hand forth and decides to show his favor to you and makes you a member of the wealthy elect. Doesn't have anything to do with access to good nutrition for little kids. Doesn't have anything to do with the inadequacy of services. Doesn't have anything to do with stability of home life. No. It's just because poor people are. But then there's Ivy Taylor, the Democrat mayor of San Antonio, Texas. And she answered, remember this is prayer meeting Wednesday. Thanks to Isaac, by the way, for this story. To me, it's broken people. People not being in relationships with their Creator, and therefore not being in good relationship with their families and their communities, and not being productive members of society. So, I mean, I think that's the ultimate answer. The ultimate answer. The answer that is at the very pinnacle of answerness, if you want to get all platonic about it. I mean, it might be because of hunger. Might be because of shitty wages. Might be because families have a hard time staying together in the midst of economic crisis. Might be something as seemingly prosaic as the inability to get reliable transportation to and from work. Might be booze, might be drugs. But even if it's every one of those things, Mayor Ivy Taylor of San Antonio, Texas, says that the ultimate answer is because people aren't godly enough. This did not sit well with Lori Gaylor. She's one of the co-presidents of the Freedom from Religion Foundation. And she immediately fired off a letter to Ivy Taylor. And she said, as mayor, you represent a diverse population that consists of not only Christians, but also atheists, agnostics, Jews, Muslims, and Hindus. No Buddhists? Come on, there's got to be one Buddhist in San Antonio, please. Nationally, about 35% of millennials, she continued, are non-religious. Imagine for a moment a mayoral candidate making such undeserved and broad accusations against Jews or Muslims instead of non-believers. The outcry would properly be swift and severe. It should be no different for non-believers. Interviewed by the Washington Post, whence this story comes, Ms. Gaylor said, as mayor, she has a bully pulpit, but it shouldn't be an actual pulpit. It implies the root of all bad things is godlessness. San Antonio is not a congregation. She's not a pastor. She's a mayor. We do hope that she'll realize not just what's offensive about it, but that it is so wrong. Not getting it at all, Mayor Ivy Taylor then went to the Facebook, utterly oblivious to the ancient maxim that the first law of holes is, when you're in one, stop digging. And she said that her words were taken. And why is it that the Christians always do this? You catch them smack dab in the middle of a word-for-word quote. You don't take any of the words out of it. And they say, I was taken out of context, bless God. Praise Jesus. Those heathens have taken me out of context again. No, she wanted people to understand that it wasn't just poor people who are broken. Jesus, broken. You know what breaks people? Hunger. You know what else breaks people? Being worked to death. Something else that breaks people? Getting sick and not being able to go to the doctor. And Texas has probably the highest uninsured population of any state in the union. But I guess Mayor Ivy Taylor is going to pray it all away so the people that have shitty jobs, low pay, poor health, hunger, so that they can be mended by God. But like I said, she doubled down. I also believe in original sin, and that was the context for my comment in the YouTube video clip. We're all broken, from the richest among us to the poorest, until we forge a relationship with our Maker. I could have expressed myself more clearly in explaining my belief at the forum. And she said she's tried to explain to people that leaders should not govern, and she doesn't think that leaders should govern from the Bible. And of course, it's somebody else's fault. It's always somebody else's fault when a Christian not only sticks one foot in their mouth, but gets the other one in there with it. I don't know if anyone took the time to really understand what I was trying to convey. And if I wasn't effective in communicating that, then I certainly wish I could have been clearer. The history of our urban areas is that a lot of the policies that have been developed on the federal and local levels have led to the creation of islands of poverty. I've spent my career on efforts trying to level the playing field. Ms. Gaylor over at the Freedom from Religion Foundation said, well, there had been a Facebook statement, and it's kind of a non-apology apology. This just isn't good enough. It's a stereotype she's perpetuating. We're not criticizing her record combating poverty. We're blaming her for blaming non-theism or non-godliness for poverty. And, of course, she wants the religious maniac community to be more involved. People coming from a passionate faith perspective can be more effective at reaching people and combating poverty than we are in the halls of government. This is sickening. Oh, but I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. That if you were to ask, you know, some go-along, get-along type, one of those helpful Republicans, like, say, Squint, would tell you that the Democrats can never win. The Democrats can never win unless they make room in their tent for pro-life Democrats and pro-gun Democrats and theocratic Democrats who think that the problems of poverty in San Antonio is caused by a lack of godliness. Because I've heard that several mornings now. Starting with the discussion of Bernie Sanders going and endorsing the mayoral candidate in Omaha, Nebraska, who thinks that the government needs to control what a woman does with her reproductive parts. In other words, he's opposed to the right to choose. Well, the Democrats have to make room in their party for people who want to take away a woman's right to make decisions about the workings of her own body. Whatever happened to the big tent? So let's see. We've got to make room in the big tent for anti-choice Democrats, and we've got to make room in the big tent for theocrat Democrats, and we've got to make room in the big tent for NRA gun fetishist Democrats, And we got to make room in the big tent for Democrats who want to keep blowing up places like Appalachia or fracking the bejesus out of anywhere they can get, anywhere they can sink a well, and getting, say, tens of thousands of people's water poisoned. Got to make room for them in that big tent, or people like Joe Scarborough won't be happy and will never win again. You got it? Of course, there's no room in the Republican Party for a pro-choice Republican. There's no room in the Republican Party for an atheist Republican. There's no room in the Republican Party for a common sense gun Republican. There's no room in the Republican Party for someone who believes that everybody should be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. No, it's the Democrats who have to compromise their morals. I mean, Jesus Christ, really? Why can't the Democrats just waffle a little bit on a woman's right to choose, huh? I mean, they're only women. You can't have hard and fast rules. You can't draw a line in the sand and say you can't be a Democrat unless you support a woman's right to control the workings of her own body. I mean, goddamn! As Arnold points out, oh, well, mark it. Let's just become Republicans. It's about how it shakes out, isn't it? But see, if you listen to the people who preach the holy gospel of economic anxiety, they'll tell you that that whole women's right to choose, that's your identity politics. There's no room for identity politics anymore. I mean, if all those those African Americans sick and tired of having the cops beat the stuffing out of them and shoot them and murder them and kill them and shoot them in the back and get told by the Supreme Court it's okay to shoot them in the back, that's identity politics. If Democrats want to win, we've got to go up to those economically anxious, cranky old white people and tell them, listen, sister, brother, those others. I mean, listen, if you'll just come back to voting Democrat, we'll take away a woman's right to choose. If you'll just come back to voting Democrat, we'll get those wrong colored people to just shut up. We won't pay attention to them anymore. Cause, and those tree huggers, well, they can piss off too. Cause we're gonna make America great again. Oh wait, has that been used? Yes. Well, you are correct, Arnold. Arnold says, if I remember rightly, the party's already made such a flip in platforms in history. A couple of times, really, if you get right down to it. Yes. For those poor souls who think that the only that they're gonna bring those, I mean, really, that they're gonna. We've already dispelled with the myth of those millions of billions of former Obama voters who voted for Trump because of their economic anxiety. There really weren't that many of them. the surest way to lose and keep losing is to keep throwing people and groups of people under the bus. Oh, I know, I know. I'm not supposed to talk about Bernie throwing women's right, women their right to choose under the bus in Omaha, and then having to come out and rather clumsily say that maybe that, well, I mean, of course, you know, we've got to support a woman's right to choose. But you know, there's going to be Democrats that I don't agree with on that, and well, it's okay by me as long as they understand that we're going to fix their economic anxiety. Bullshit. Just bullshit. And I feel kind of comfortable. I feel like I got history on my side on this one. I made reference to Dr. King's letter from Birmingham jail last night or the night before about the well-meaning white folks who said, well, yes, we agree with you there, Dr. King, but now's not the time, and do you have to make such a fuss about it? That's the same. This is the same thing. At least pretty clearly to me. Oh, and speaking of Squint and the meat puppet, it might be time. It might be time for an intervention. This is this happened today on over on Squint and the Meat Puppet. And I realize some things are just done for the purposes of ratings. But this little moment just sounds so very much like any given morning around the breakfast table, evening around the dinner table, in a Republican household, you know, where maybe the little woman gets a little uppity once in a while. The discussion at hand was about future first woman president Ivanka Trump Kushner. I mean, that's what I call her. They weren't calling her that on Squint and the Meat Puppet. But it got into a conversation about the nepotistic nature of Ivanka's presence inside the Trump administration. I'm not kidding. I don't think this was done for entertainment purposes. I think we got a little tiny glimpse of how Joe Scarborough really is. Joe was, of course, inclined to defend Ivanka's presence in the administration. And maybe Mika wasn't so sold on it. Okay, so pay attention. It'll kind of come and go quickly.
Who had his ear throughout the end of the campaign and at the beginning part of the campaign. We look at what's happened on the National Security Council. We look at what's happened inside the White House. You have David Ignatius, Tom Friedman, Bob Woodward, all these people saying that things are going better on the National Security Council. That didn't just happen.
Good.
There was a battle inside the White House, and guess what? Jared and Ivanka won.
It would be unreasonable to say that there are not any goods that may follow from nepotism, but it's still nepotism.
Yeah. Well, as it was when my hero, my political
exactly,
hero,
we just talked about, yeah,
was appointed Attorney General,
right,
for his brother. And Republicans didn't like that back then. I think if you looked at Bobby Kennedy's record, you'd say some good things came out of that. And no. Ivanka,
so you're comparing
Trump,
Ivanka
and Jared,
Trump to Bobby Kennedy?
You don't have to be so snotty.
No,
I was
I'm
about
just curious
to say, you didn't let me get it out. You don't have to be so rude.
Well, no,
the fact of the matter is that they are not. Bobby Kennedy, as I was about to say, but you wanted to get your cheap shot in, so you got your cheap shot in. No, I'm not saying Jared or Bobby Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy did a lot of things before he became Attorney General of the United States of America. But I am saying, just like when John Kennedy had a question, he called the one person he could trust in the world, Bobby Kennedy, to come into the Oval Office, and they sat there and talked. So when Donald Trump needs to talk to somebody, he talks to these two people. You may like it, right. You may not like it, but as Willie said, that's the reality.
Right. It's still not normal, right? We're talking about the normalization of this presidency. The fact that he has, as his two senior advisors, his daughter and his son-in-law, is still not totally normal in the traditions of American presidential politics.
Of course not. Very few things about...
Wait, okay, so Katty Kay of the BBC gets an of course not. She doesn't get told to shut up. Well, you wouldn't let me finish before you just had to get your snotty little comment in, didn't you? Didn't you, Edith? Well, stifle, Edith. I don't think I want to be around Joe Scarborough when he's drinking. You know, it takes a lot to get a WTF out of the angry Indian. I want you to know that that clip got a WTF out of the angry Indian. Misogynist bastard. So you tell me, was that theater? Or was that Joe Scarborough? Because, see, here's the thing. I don't believe that John or Bobby Kennedy was a hero to Joe Scarborough, because if either of them were, Joe Scarborough wouldn't be a goddamn Republican. And he damn sure wouldn't have been one of Newt Gingrich's Contract on America Republicans. Now I was born about 10 months before John Kennedy was killed. And I'm 54. And John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy were Joe Scarborough's heroes. Joe Scarborough is 2 months and 9 days younger than me. So you'll pardon me if I'm not quite willing to buy into this notion that Joe Scarborough was avidly taking in the political scene of Camelot when he was a month old. But see, it fits. It fits within the context of trying to somehow excuse away Ivanka's and Jared's presence in this administration. Ivanka has never been to law school. Ivanka has no foreign policy experience. She has no business in the administration except for the fact that the paranoia that runs rampant inside what's left of Tangerine Tiberius's spirochete hollowed brain tells him they're the only ones I can trust, definitely the only ones I can trust. Very, very the only ones I can trust, bigly. And no matter what he says by way of critiquing Trump, he's still a Trumpanzee at heart. This really is rather a... she didn't even get the full sentence out. Are you comparing Ivanka Trump to Robert Kennedy? You just had to get your snotty little... Just listen to it again.
Throughout the end of the campaign and at the beginning part of the campaign. Inside the White House, you have David Ignatius, Tom Friedman, Bob Woodward, all these people saying that things are going better on the National Security Council. That didn't just happen.
Good.
There was a battle inside the White House, and guess what? Jared and Ivanka won.
It would be unreasonable to say that there are not any goods that may follow from nepotism, but it's still nepotism.
And that's a heck of a point. It's still nepotism. And she's still running a company that he says he's divested from, that is a revocable trust that he plans to go back to running as soon as he's out of the White House. And she is the epicenter of all the profiteering. And so there's a significant difference between Bobby Kennedy becoming the Attorney General for JFK and him keeping his profit-making center as close to him as he possibly can. Damn. Oh, and by the way, do you remember, if you're of a certain age, do you remember the Saturday Night Live skit after Mommy Dearest came out? The Saturday Night Live skit where Gilda Radner played the little girl, and I forget who played Joan. And I think it was Bill Murray who played Clark Gable coming by. I was going to bring you a dolly. But your mama said you'd like to have a nice piece of raw liver. Creepy as hell. But what made that skit were the faces, because nobody made faces like Gilda Radner. The faces that Gilda Radner made as Joan Crawford's daughter, Christina. The first thing that I thought of when I saw this clip and the faces that Mika was making toward the camera was the faces that Gilda Radner made comically in that skit. And I think you've got a good question on your hands, Michael in Madison. Subject line, is Mika safe? I certainly hope Mika doesn't have an accident in Joe's office. He sounded like he was getting ready to kill. Again? He did. He sounded like he was one more syllable out of Mika's mouth away from just backhanding her across the set. In true traditional family values, Republican fashion.
As it was when my hero, my political hero, we just talked about, yeah, was appointed Attorney General,
right,
for his brother. And Republicans didn't like that back then. I think if you looked at Bobby Kennedy's record, you'd say some good things came out of that. And no. Ivanka Trump and Jared.
Trump to Bobby Kennedy.
You don't have to be so snotty.
No,
I was
I'm
about
just
to
curious.
Say you didn't let me get it out. You don't have to be so rude.
Well, no,
the fact of the matter is that they are not Bobby Kennedy, as I was about to say.
So the woman was rude by speaking. You don't have to be so rude. You had to get your little snotty comment out. And honest to God, I'm when the program's over, I'm going to watch this clip again and see if she starts. See if she, because she turns full face to the camera. I want to see if she starts blinking. Help me, or SOS. Dash 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 dot dot dot, or is it dot 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 dash 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 dot dot dot, or whatever. We'll figure it out. I've played a lot of weird, funny, creepy, bizarre clips from Morning Joe on this program. I think we just reached the Everest. I wonder how domestic violence advocates responded to that. I wonder if somebody who's an expert in domestic violence might. Well, that's true, too. That's true, too. Michael in Madison says, I hope Joe doesn't think of Mika as his intern, because we know how that story ends. Yeah, we do. And she kind of dips her head a little bit. And then she turns back to the camera and makes those faces. I wouldn't have been surprised if she, without saying anything, she hadn't mouthed the words, help me. You do not want to be around, you don't want to be one of Joe Scarborough's kids when daddy gets angry. Oh no, you don't. Let's see, I'm going to the phones in a minute here. Note coming in from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. The eyes of taxes are upon you. That most unholy of unholidays having recently passed, April 15th, I thought I'd just mention in passing the next shit bomb being readied in the DJT administration. Revised tax code. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Details are sketchy, naturally. But here's what we got. Regular folk will be thrilled to learn that their standard deduction is going up, but only from an absolutely ridiculous $12.6K per year per joint filing to an almost ridiculous $24K. No more medical expense deductions, though, as though your poor ass could actually afford to pay afford health care anyway. And if you have to happen to live in a state that taxes, well, pony up, bitch! You well-heeled earners will be glad to know that the government is just going to lop that pesky 39.6% top bracket off because, you know, America's tax system is a progressive one, all the while ensuring that the poorest trash in the trailer park gets to keep paying a bottom 10%, unless by hook or crook they manage to land in the next and only other bracket being proposed, 25%, which is quite a jump considering the more moderately progressive 15% bracket, and yet another bracket of the current system, something like progressive with a gouging, gut-splattering vengeance. Those other brackets just get in the way, right? And America definitely being a land of opportunity, it's always so much better to go from struggling middle class to filthy fucking rich in one fell swoop or one neck-breaking tax bracket. Besides, why have a top bracket of 39.6% for the wealthiest among us when you can just bump them down about 12% or so automatically to that 35% bracket, you know, where the noisy, complaining middle class live. Thank God for a truly progressive and magical tax system and the representation that goes with it. and the three-card Monty thrown in, all for free. Just like Las Vegas. Only a little dirtier. Get back to work, motherfuckers. April 2018 is right around the corner. Regards, Steve, in China, where they do have a progressive tax system.
Well, see, Steve, let me explain something. If you've only got two tax brackets, that means you've only got two tax brackets to wipe out when you finally get, when the Republicans finally get their really nasty, sticky, wet dream of a flat tax system.
Oh, hell, we only got two tax brackets anyway. Might as well wipe them out and just put on flat tax. Be good for America. And meanwhile, the tax plan that was put forward today was just what did George W. Bush call this? The voodoo economics? I mean, once again, the Republicans have said taxes have to go. And you know what? It's not a brand new thought. I have recently re-immersed myself in the Middle Ages. The earliest conceptions of taxation were that they were to be levied only occasionally when the king needed something, like a war or a solid gold privy or, you know, something like that. The idea of actually paying, everybody paying to maintain the state was something that would not come along until the idea of a centralized state itself came along. In other words, and just think about it this way. Every time you see a Republican talking about cutting taxes, what that Republican is actually saying is that he, because they're mostly he's and they're mostly white, is that he wants to drag the country back into the Middle Ages. You know, pre-bubonic plague. Inspiring, isn't it? Hey, Laurel, what's happening?
Nothing too much.
Haven't heard from you for a while.
I've been keeping a low profile, just trying to let everything sink in, you know. What happens when you're counting down the days of empire? Counting down the number of hot showers you get to take. LT's keeping me pretty busy, though, aren't you? Yeah. What have you been up to? But anyway, kind of find it ironic that, you know, while you've been busy starving yourself to death with this situation, I think I've been busy eating myself to death in the middle of this situation. Yeah, I have.
Yeah, and LT sounds, yeah, left me out in the cold too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, LT, hey, buddy, you don't want the asparagus yogurt, trust me.
No. You know, and, you know, trying to find favorite flavors of ice cream can get a little annoying down here. And over here in Blue Bunny Country, I know you've been talking about, you know, comparing, you know, all natural briars to the chemical stew that is Blue Bunny. Well, turns out that Blue Bunny World Headquarters is just an hour south of me in the town of Lamar's, Iowa, smack dab in the middle of Stephen King's district. And try as I might, and I've scoured grocery stores all over the place, I've even scoured the Blue Bunny website, I've yet to find Blue Bunny cantaloupe flavored ice cream.
Damn nation.
You know, damn nation, that's right.
Have you written to Ben and Jerry's? You see, I mean, Ben and Jerry's even uses guar gum and locust bean gum. Yeah, damn, guys, come on.
I know. I don't know. Maybe I should start some kind of pledge drive or something where, you know, I know you've been having struggles like later on in the month to get funding. I'm thinking, well, if I can't motivate myself to lose weight, maybe I can do it for like the horn or something. Go like a go some kind of weight loss challenge where however many, you know, pounds I lose during a month, say by the 21st or so, then, you know, different horn members can donate money based on how much weight I lose. You know, since I work in a casino, we'll just, you know, make it the 21st. We call it Laurel's Blackjack Weight Loss Challenge. You know, I'll send a picture of myself weighing myself. Trust me, I'll be wearing clothes. I don't want to burn any unwanted images into your brain, but, you know, I'll mail you or send a image of me mailing or weighing myself to you. And then, like, on the 21st, I'll send myself weighing myself again and whatever weight I lose. And however, you know, I can pledge $5 for every pound of weight I lose. And, you know, other horn members can bet $1, bet 10. I don't care.
LT doesn't want to be left out of this. It's pretty obvious.
No, you don't. You don't have a problem losing weight, though, do you? No, you are the energetic one of the bunch.
Well, if you had to wear a goddamn fur coat in July, you'd lose weight, too.
Oh, trust me. Wall shampooing season is only about 6 weeks away right now, so I'm not exactly looking forward to it. But
oh, yeah, by the way, I do need to put out some thanks. Thank you very kindly to David. We have got our fundraising goal just dropped to 163.33. So making progress. Right. 163.33.
Exactly.
And LT seems to approve.
Yes, he does. But oh, what else was I thinking about? Trying to keep my senile brain functioning here, but yeah, you know, I mentioned the fact that, you know, I may be in Minnesota, but I'm kind of out in the hinterlands. I basically work at the casino I work at is on the Iowa South Dakota border. So I work in Stephen King's district, and, you know, the lady that represents South Dakota, the lone at large representative, I think I got a kick out of it when you called her a couple weeks ago, Christy Noem, not much. That's pretty much how it is around here, you know, but anyway, I'll keep this short. You darn near filibustered the whole show away on us, but just to keep an eye on anything I might send you. Like I said, I'm tossing this weight loss challenge idea around because I know how how the show hurts for, you know, late month funding, and, you know, just kind of shop the idea around and see it, you know, see if you can get any takers to it. Good Lord knows I need the motivation. Seems like every time I turn on the TV, I just want to eat another gallon of ice cream. So
yeah, and I'm pissed off because I'm out of Breyer's chocolate, and that means a 30-mile round trip to Kroger's.
Yikes!
And the Wiggling Pig, I don't know if they're having trouble with stock or what, but they don't have any Breyer's at all. And they've got Friendly's brand, and you know me, label reader, milk, cream, sugar, high fructose corn syrup, put it back in the freezer. Wait, really? Why? Yeah. Why? It's ice cream. Why does it need, why? Why does it need high fructose corn syrup in it? I mean, anything? Because I got nothing.
You know, freedom means having the right to consume high fructose corn syrup in massive quantities. You know?
Well, we've got to.
I don't know.
We've got to support our American corn farmers in their war against those sneaky Canadians.
Yeah, because good Lord, we can't trust their bacon. They ain't bacon. That's ham.
that's not even ham, for God's sakes. Doesn't that come from like the loin or something? Bacon, please.
Yeah.
It doesn't even crunch. Nope.
Exactly. Lord knows. You take an IV out of me, you get Casey's gas station pizzas. You don't want to get anywhere near that when your stomach does heal up, because that stuff is evil.
I'm
out here in the Midwest.
Casey's?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got stores all over the upper Midwest, and their pizza's just, I mean, it's really good, but like I said, you can drink it through a straw. It's a little on the greasy side.
Well, they pulled the Godfathers out of one of the local gas stations and replaced it with a Dunkin' Donuts. And it, of course, I've still got my Hunt Brothers up there. I haven't had a Hunt Brothers gas station pizza. Well, I mean, I haven't had pizza. I haven't had food. So, yeah. But. Yeah,
well, the only problem is, I you know, ever since LT came to the house, the amount of time I spent actually cooking in the home is a little bit decreased because, you know, it's kind of hard to operate in the galley kitchen when you've got, you know, when you're trying to piggyback ride a Malamute. So it's
I can
usually
well
I spend most of my eating most I spend most of my eating time out of the house. You know, I'm not this. You know, I'm not this person where I want to share my human food with the dog, not to be mean or anything, but, you know, he eats a lot better than I do.
Well,
he's
probably eating better than me right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that I want any.
Yeah. Yeah, he's up to about 120 now, which is pretty good. He's almost 2 years old now. Cats are starting to get around to not being so irritated by his presence. Lord knows I teach him to try and be gentle to the cats, and, you know, the cats still rather kind of want to keep their paws, you know, legs length away from him, but he is friendly around the cats, and I, you know, I can't complain too much about that.
No, no. Yeah, see, the torment has begun. Sparky just sent me a link to, Tillamook Super Premium Ice Cream from Oregon.
Ooh.
I still need to know if it's got any guar gum in it or any locust bean gum, because I'm positively dogmatic about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's good to hear from you, Laurel. It's been a while.
No problem. Let's keep the show rolling. There ain't much time left, but good to talk to you again. And LT, yeah. You want to say anything more to Bob today?
Good night, LT.
No. Good night, LT. Good night.
I
got no more food.
He got it all out of his system.
Exactly.
He's a Malamute, a few words. Take care, Laurel.
You too, Bob.
Bye now. Our buddy Laurel calling from the wilds of southwest Minnesota, which is nowhere near South Duluth, where Corey Stewart is from. I guess in Virginia they're not calling him a carpetbagger, because, well, he loves that flag, right? Okay, let's see. 3 minutes before the hour. If you want to get in on the conversation, you're more than welcome so to do. The stress line is 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. The other line, 304-574-8178, it tends to work a little better than the stress line for some people. And like Laurel did, from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And, well, if it's prayer meeting Wednesday, so if the Spirit moves you. I just hitting a couple of sort of just, oh, I don't know, drive-bys or what. No, it's a bit. Oh, speaking of which. So I mentioned that they don't have any briars up at the Wiggling Pig. And I know that because I was up at the Wiggling Pig earlier today. On the way back, I was listening to West Virginia Public Radio, and because of the budget mess that the Republicans have created in our state, public radio is looking at having a whole bunch of its funding cut. Because, of course, Republicans don't like public radio because they think it's liberal media. Sometimes they say bad things about Co. And during the pledge fund portion of it, one of the persons who was talking about the need to for people to contribute and fill up the shortfall, she said, and the news hounds love West Virginia Public Radio. She stopped herself short, and this is one of those cultural moments. She stopped herself short from saying news junkies. Because, that, you know, that's a phrase that's been in the vocabulary for a while. Oh, I'm a real news junkie. But because of what is going on in this state and others, I don't know if she self-censored or if there was a memo going around that says, don't say junkie. It's no longer appropriate. And she said, and people, well, and you know who else loves West Virginia Public Radio? News hounds. Just one of those little telling cultural moments. Another telling cultural moment, if you will. You may have seen over the weekend that Aaron Morin, who played Joni on Happy Days, died. And she was 56 years old. She died in Indiana. And immediately almost, her former co-star, Scott Baio, you remember Scott Baio, he was the biggest star Donald Trump could find for his Clavering meeting in Cleveland this summer. You know, Scott Baio is there on the stage giving the two thumbs up and everything while, oh, I don't know, half of the future Trump administration was having meetings with the Russian ambassador Sergei Kislyak, which of course means absolutely nothing because they couldn't possibly have talked about anything that meant anything except how maybe they talked about how snuggly Vladimir Putin is. Okay, that's possible because I'm sure they all agreed about that. Is not President Putin snuggly man? Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir, Ambassador. He's definitely cuddly. I can't think of anybody. I can't think of anybody I'd like to cuddle shirtless more than your president. I'd certainly rather snuggle him than that one in our White House. I could not agree more. That's all there was to it. It's really nothing. It's just nothing. But anyway, that's what was going on while Scott Baio was gathering all the attention out front, talking about how awesome Donald Trump is. Well, when his former co-star Aaron Morin died, he jumped out there and immediately did an interview this past Monday. The Bernie and Sid radio show, God only knows what that is. If you know, well, good for you. I don't. But the Bernie and Sid radio show called Scott Baio, and Scott Baio said, what? Bernie and Sid want to talk to me? Groovy. And of course, they wanted to talk to him because he was Chachi to her Joni. And so they wanted some inside skinny on what may have led to her demise because the gossip world was going absolutely wild with scandalous rumors. And so in the interview, he told Bernie and Sid, my thing is, I feel bad because her whole life she was troubled, could never find what made her happy and content. For me, you do drugs or drink, you're gonna die. Well, it turns out, because of this thing called an autopsy, performed by this person called a medical examiner, it turned out that Aaron Morin didn't die from dope or pills or an overdose. She died cancer. Like thousands, tens of thousands of Americans will do this year and every year.
Well, Aaron Morin's family did not care for what Scott Baio had to say. And then his wife, Scott Baio's wife, began calling around, according to TMZ, for her husband. Baio couldn't make the calls himself. He had his wife do it. Well, Aaron Morin's brother, Tony, didn't care for it. He said, special shout out to Scott Baio. I already went on Twitter about you. I hope it finds you. You and my little sis had a very brief fling. She dumped you two reasons. One, she told me you were more like a little girl and not a man. Two, she told me you were tiny, you know, barely a man in the man region. True story. Scott, I'd advise you to get on your knees and pray you never run into me. And he said, well, guys, guess what? I was contacted by Scott Baio's wife. His wife? Coward? I've never met her. I do know the scumbag piece of shit Scott Baio, though. He was a piece of shit back then, and he still is. He had his wife contact me. Very apologetic and shit. Doesn't surprise me. It's too late, you mother pieces of crunk. Go back under the rock you crawled out from under. There isn't one word I want to hear you speak. Makes me sick to my stomach. So this is all just kind of tawdry, and why are you talking about it? This is why. The response of Scott Baio to all of this. Let's see. How would a human being respond? God, I'm sorry. Jesus, I don't know what made me say that. I'll regret this for the rest of my days. Please, I hope everyone can forgive me for leaping to a conclusion like that. I never should have. Come on! This is Scott Baio, who stood on a stage in Cleveland and told the assembled, frenzied Trumpanzees, all those people filled with all that economic anxiety, about how Trump was going to make America great again. And lock her up! Lock her up! Right? And but her emails! Right? That's Scott Baio. So naturally, he went to Facebook and said, I didn't say she died due to a drug overdose. I'm just saying that if she had, it would have been horrible, horrible. But this right here is the whipped cream on the shit. This is the pièce de résistance. I'm sure they're attacking me because I'm a conservative. These people never attack the press for getting the story wrong about heroin. They attack me. I don't know. Did the press go on the, what's the name of that? The Bernie and Sid show and say, for me, you do drugs or drink, you're going to die. No. Scott Baio did that. That's right. Scott Baio, member of the party that preaches personal responsibility, but engages in none. What's that? What's that, Mr. Spicoli?
You dick!
That's twice tonight for Mr. Spicoli. Class act. All the other Happy Days cast members were, I'm shocked, I'm so sad, this is terrible, we all loved Aaron. Scott Baio, on the other hand, Scott Baio, conservative, you drink, you do drugs, you're gonna die. So just another great moment in Republican family values. Let's run over to the stress line and check in with Carl in Massachusetts. Hey, Carl.
How's it going?
Good, you?
Hey, you should call Scott Bile by what he is, Bile.
Oh, very nice. Scott Bile. Wait a minute.
Yeah, from Scottsky.
Yeah, it's
Did
pretty.
You hear that one?
Yeah, it's pretty sleazy, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a scumbag. He always has been. He was a scumbag way back then. I mean, and then you hear what he said about his collector. He's just a piece of, you know. There's a reason why he likes Trump. Trump's one of him. You know.
Well, assholes gravitate to other assholes, right?
Yeah. Yep. And speaking of assholes, I figured out what's wrong with people like Paul Ryan.
Yeah?
You know, Paul Ryan always talks about he's so religious and loves God, blah, 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 but he's an Ayn Rand follower and worshiper, you know, and makes everybody read those fucking pieces of shit books. I think he's actually an atheist. And I think he uses religion I think he's a psychopath, or maybe just a sociopath. But I really, I'm leaning more that he's a psychopath, and he's not where he deliberately, like, he has the knife in his hand and kills people, but he likes seeing people suffer.
I can buy that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I can. He's incapable of anything resembling human sympathy.
But he always claims that he's such a good Christian, he follows God, and I think people like him and Pat Robertson and all those other fuckwads, I'm an atheist, sort of. I could be agnostic. When I see Cosmos, you know, I watch Cosmos or Nova or something like that, then I can believe there's a God. You know, science actually brings me closer, you know, when you see what's out there and not just here, you could see that there might be there could be somebody bigger than me, but there's no man that's going to tell me what that is, no human being. But I think people like that, like Robertson and that scumbag preacher down in that had his house flooded in Louisiana last year or wherever.
Oh yeah, that's Tony Perkins of the Family Resource Council.
Yes. I think they're atheists, but I don't think they believe in God, but they've had it pushed through their heads so long that they use it to
Carl, it's a means to an end.
Themselves.
It's a means to an end. What they believe in is wealth acquisition. That's why they're Republicans.
Yes, but unlike Paul Ryan's part, he's already got wealth. He is using it for himself, but he likes seeing people suffer. Maybe when his father died, maybe he suffered then, and he wants other people to feel what it's like to suffer too. You know, have to walk in and see their father dead. Maybe that's the only thing I can come up with. You know, it's just maybe I should have been a psychiatrist, but it's. You know, it's long past that. But it's just, I look at these people who, in one hand, one time, you know, in one sentence, they say how they love people, blah, blah, blah. But then in the next sentence they say how school lunches are are destroying poor kids' minds, things like that. You know, just the benefit. And it doesn't even benefit him when he says shit like that. They're just, it's fucking. It's just cruel. And I can't understand where cruelty like that comes from unless they're just fucking psychopaths and like seeing people suffer. It's just. It's,
well, if
it's really
no, see, I think they are very religious people, Carl. And they worship a god that is named in the Bible Mammon. They worship wealth. Mammon. M-A-M-M-O-N. They worship wealth. They worship money. They worship the acquisition of power.
And, you know, sometimes in acquiring massive amounts of wealth and power, you've got to squash a few bugs, or, I mean, little people. And that's okay, because, well, it wasn't like they were doing anything anyway.
Yes, you're right, but people like that, we should get rid of. We should get rid of them. You know, before, during, or after the fact, we need to get rid of them and show the rest of them what happens. Like I think I told you this before, when Madoff, when his son was found hanged, I was fucking hoping that somebody had fucking got into his son's apartment and killed him. Because then it would have showed some of these real scumbags that operate on Wall Street like that, that they just can't keep doing this.
Well, I'm a peacenik. I want people in Paul Ryan's district to have some sort of moral awakening and just relieve Paul Ryan of his job.
Yeah, but that won't do anything in the long run. I know I'm sounding like one of them, but that won't do anything. You have to show.
Well, I don't want a visit for you or me from the people in the dark suits with the skinny ties who talk to their wrists. Okay.
It's not like I'm going to do anything, and it's not like any liberals going to do anything. But sooner or later, it has to come down to you have to show the future them that are going to take their place that they can't do this. That there are consequences that they have to answer for, because Paul Ryan's never going to, he could lose his job. He might become a lobbyist. Even if he doesn't become a lobbyist, he's still rich. It doesn't bother him. It really doesn't. He didn't lose anything. He won everything the whole way. It's just what I've, you can't just let these people get away with what they're getting away with. They're affecting too many people with their programs and what they do to us. You know, it's not only the middle class, but the lower class people are just, living, dying because of people like him. Literally dying and killing each other because of their fucking programs or their lack of empathy and just their greed. Because people, it's just shown in the media that greed is good. You want to get rich, fuck over some people, make them starve. Who cares if you don't see them? Even if you see them, then in America, in Europe, if you see starving people, it's bad. In America, if you see starving people,
it's
eating,
Tuesday.
Hey, that's good.
It's Tuesday.
At least I'm eating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed.
But
indeed, I get the Carl. I get.
It's not like I'm going to pick up a gun and go.
No. I know that.
Liberals,
it's just that I fear that way lies madness.
Yes, I know. I can understand both sides of that issue, but it's just when I see people like that, or Trump who can just in 1 week he allows. He allows a poison to go into farmlands that's going to poison kids and affect their ability to think later on. And in pretty much the same month, he allows surface mining just to dump all this shit into your streams. And then a week later, he goes, "Oh, look at the little babies that died where." In Syria, I gotta go do so, and then kill some of those babies in the process of getting back somebody who killed babies. It's just
right, because I guarantee you that the little babies who the thousands, tens of thousands of little babies who've been blown into itsy bitsy teeny tiny pieces by conventional weapons died equally as horribly, but that never bothered Trump.
Yes, and then I hear. How the Syrians used what's the powder?
What, sarin?
No, not the
chlorine
powder. What's that?
Chlorine?
No, no, it's a powder. It's a metal, heavy metal. The stuff that burns.
Oh, phosphorus?
Yes, white phosphorus. We use that in Fallujah. Multiple.
And Israel used it. Israel used it in the occupied territories.
Yes, and where did they get it? From us.
Most likely.
You know, and it's just, yeah, more than most likely, you know, almost every canister that's fired over there has U.S., you know, U.S. company's name on it, you know, but that, it was bad when they use it in Syria, but it's not bad when we do it, you know, especially Fallujah. Look at how many people are burned to the bone there, but it doesn't fucking matter when we do it. It's good. But, yeah, anyways.
Progress.
There goes my heart rate. There goes my blood pressure.
Take it easy on yourself, Carl. We'll talk again soon, okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Thanks
now.
For letting me pen.
No Bye. Worries. No worries at all. Carl calling from Massachusetts. And Carl, you know, Carl intends no violence. And I don't think any of us want it. And, of course, I remember when John Cornyn, the senator from Texas, when judges were having their lives threatened, he said, well, I ain't saying it's right, but, you know, you can understand where they're coming from. Yeah, I remember when a senator said that. Hey, let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Bob.
Satin.
Hey, yeah, Paul Ryan is people. Hey, you know, he does remind me of, like, a Pennsylvania state trooper, the kind that you don't want to meet at night. On a hilly road with those steely reptilian eyes. But we all know he's evil. You know. But, you know, I didn't get to finish my thought last night, and I was feeling drained because I was kind of depressed about that situation in Arkansas. But before I get to that, I finally figured out why you keep talking about Breyers, right? Because, you know, that's where I grew up, where they make that. And you could smell... Like, they used to make it in North Philly when I was growing up. And you could smell it. Matter of fact, remember where the heroin is now. We're in Kansas. Like, when they were, like, I always liked the mint chocolate chip. Because it only had, like, five ingredients. You know, I'm a label reader. Cream, sugar.
Milk.
The chocolate. Milk. I mean, it was very basic.
Milk, cream, sugar, chocolate.
Old Kraft bought it. Yeah.
Well, and if you stick with the vanilla and the chocolate, it's still that way. But if you get like Heath Bar Crunch Breyers, it's got the locust bean gum and the guar gum and the all of that stuff.
I don't see it. It used to be all pure until not that long. Maybe in the '90s. I don't know when I first noticed that, but it wasn't that long ago. It was just. Like you would make it at home. I mean, that was the big deal. That's why people bought it. So I kind of get that. You know, and it's a shame you just can't buy ice cream like you were saying. But it's some kind of scam going on with this corn syrup. They try to put it in everything. I think they just have too much of it, and they want to subsidize the corn farmers or something. I don't know. Maybe somebody knows, some in the Midwest knows, because you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I do.
I mean, read labels. It's like in every, like where it does not need to be. It's everywhere.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It's probably not that good for you. No, it's not good for you because that's what gives people diabetes. That's one of the reasons people shouldn't be drinking or giving their kids sodas.
I'm on my fourth day, Todd. I'm on my fourth day of not taking my metformin.
What is that?
It's a diabetes drug.
Oh.
And so far, so good. You know, blood sugar's staying down where, you know, down in the happy place. It could be that the weight loss has at least had that salutary effect for me. Not that I'm going to go out and just start, you know, yopping down Hershey bars or anything, but you know, hopefully things will get better and I can, you know, as long as I'm eating smart. I mean, the one thing I've learned out of all of this, I mean, I talk about, you know, asparagus flavored yogurt, cucumber flavored yogurt, the carrot and broccoli yogurt was especially piquant, I thought. I'm joking. But one of the things that all of this has done for me, I've quit eating anything. I've quit eating food mostly. But one of the most telling factors is that I have quit eating fast food.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a tremendous difference when you eliminate that from your diet.
Absolutely.
If you can just find some way not to go through the drive-thru, whatever it is, mm-hmm. your health will change for the better.
I have to agree with you. I mean, I feel like I don't really. Well, it's not about me all the time, but yeah, I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, we've all seen these videos where a hamburger from McDonald's will not degrade, like, for years. No mold, no nothing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I bet that I remember. What was it, a photo essay or something where they just opened a McDonald's cheeseburger and set it on the on the dresser or countertop or whatever, and the damn thing didn't rot?
Yep.
I mean, Generally for something like that, you need embalming fluid, right?
Yeah, well, that's all about shelf life. They don't want to lose any product. So, that's why I'm a foodie, man. If everybody doesn't like to cook. Once you get, the cat out of here. Once you get used to cooking, it's not that bad. It's just, you know, it's something. Some people like to cook, some people don't. But, you know, it's a process, and everybody's not into it, especially guys, you know. But ladies like it when you can cook. When you come by and the house smells good and you got food ready. You know, but yeah, it's anyway, you're avoiding the chemicals. You have control of what goes into what's going into your body, you know. I mean, that's one reason I like Trader Joe's a lot. You can go in there.
Well, in my case, since I'm on day four without the metformin, one of the problems I was having was keeping my blood sugar up, because that stuff was I was crashing constantly because I wasn't eating enough to keep the metformin from just making my blood sugar go stupidly low. Mm-hmm. Now it just feels normal. And that much
That's
of
still
it,
crazy, though.
That much of it's nice.
Right.
So, you know,
I heard you talking about the issue, though. You got to be careful, man. You got to be careful not to get hit in the gut. You got to be careful. I heard what you were saying about the cysts and this and that.
Yeah, no lifting.
I mean,
No lifting,
no straining. Mm-mm. No getting drunk and say, hey, punch me in the stomach, I'm Houdini.
Well, you know, no getting drunk. No having a snort. No nothing. Mm. Like I said, now I'm just sort of staring at in wide-eyed horror at the majestic, awesome, wondrous, terror of it all. You just wake up in the
morning. You know, and I'm not trying to be funny, but do you feel a different sense of clarity? I mean, not because alcohol, you know, is alcohol, but just in general, because your body's getting cleansed, because now your colon is probably pretty damn clean.
There is something. I mean, sometimes, and I used to notice it with like beer with a lot of hops in it. Drink a couple of really hoppy beers, even though you don't get the face on or anything. You wake up the next morning and you're a little, what? You know, little fuzzy.
Yeah. IPAs. Yep.
Would do it to me every time. Well, that's all gone. And it's just, yeah, there's a little better focus. Sleep is kind of an issue, but that's also a part of the aging process. You don't sleep as long or as well the older you get.
Yeah.
I might go to bed at 12:30, and I'm up at 6 whether I want to be or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's kind of normal. So that explains the morning Joe problem.
The late and Joe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, thank you.
No, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not you, but yeah.
So I got that. Reading and retention has seemed to go up some. But the weird thing is the dreams. I've talked before about how vividly I dream. There are mornings that I wake up and I'm exhausted. Because I've been watching movies all night inside my eyelids. The projection screen is the inside of my eyelids. And the really,
yeah, that's probably good. You're getting that good REM sleep. Uh-huh.
A few nights ago, my brain was trying to entertain me. My subconscious was telling jokes in my sleep. And I'm in the dream going, ha, 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 ha. And I woke up and remembered some of it and went, that wasn't even funny.
That's great.
So it's just kind of weird. And you might, right. You might like to kind of take a, well, you know, Hamlet talks about it. To sleep, perchance to dream. Ah, there's the rub. Because he's afraid if he bumps himself off, he's going to have nightmares for all eternity. And that might actually be hell, you know?
Never know.
So, you know, that's a little. And I can remember a long time ago when I quit smoking. After I'd been quit for about 3 months,
yep.
I started having smoking nightmares. And in the dream, I know I'm quit, and I pick up a cigarette and I light it, and it's like, oh, this is awesome. And then all of a sudden in the dream, I go, ah, shit, now I got to go through all the misery of quitting again. And you wake up and you're still quit, and you're like, whew. But those things piled up after a while, and it's a little disturbing to me because last week I had the pizza nightmare.
Explain that.
Well, in my dream, I was just sitting there and my gut was happy and everything. And it wasn't hurting. And so in my dream, I start eating. There's this beautiful pizza in front of me, and I just start eating pizza. And it's cheesy and golden. The cheese is gooey and stringy, and there's mushrooms and pepperoni and Italian sausage and all the stuff that I love. And I'm like into my third slice when I realize this is so gonna fuck me up, and I'm gonna hurt so bad.
Wow.
And then you wake up and go,
I had to,
I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. But I don't need my subconscious doing that to me.
It happens.
Thank God there's no psychiatrist listening to this program.
No, listen, the smoking thing, now I smoked for 18 years, and I was, you know, I started off with Camel Shorties, okay, with no filter. So I loved smoking. I mean, I was rolling, even when I didn't have a lot of money, I would get the Top or Bugler, and then I was getting Drum. That was the best I ever had with the Drum. And when I quit, where I was trying to quit, I would dream about smoking a cigarette, and I was satiated the next morning. I was like, and sometimes I felt like I'd smoked like a whole handful, because I would roll them up and put them in a cigarette case. And I swear, I felt exactly like I had been smoking all night. You know? And I've been talking to people, and apparently it's very common. But that's interesting. Dreams. That's something. But hopefully, I heard what you said about the doctor and everything. So hopefully, everything will level out, you know, and,
we'll have to see what happens. You know, who knows? Everything's so crazy now with the federal system. You know, anything can happen. We don't know. And things could happen for the good, because I've been hearing rumors that, you know, the bean counter is like, you know what? Maybe we do need this, just the universal coverage, because at the end of the day, it's going to be cheaper. So we'll see what happens with that. But you know, I got this thing. I was like really down yesterday because it's Arkansas. They're killing people left and two people on the same gurney, and it's like, oh, we got to kill these people fast. And I am totally against the death penalty for a number of reasons. But number one, anytime you had people being released, and this happens all the time, people being released that were innocent, you know. And then when I ask people, because I'm really big on this issue, because that's a big fucking deal. To me, that's a big deal, because that can happen to anybody. But it mostly happens to poor people and people of color, you know. But people are very adamant. And when you ask them, well, why are you okay with the death penalty? They're like, well, that's our system, and they were found guilty. But I'm like, well, you know, you can't undo that. It's like our criminal justice system is not perfect, but that's the perfect remedy. In other words, you can't undo that. But anytime you got people, even one person is too many. I'm like, okay, well, if you feel that strongly about it, and you know innocent people are being released, like, all the time, you know, go to the Innocence Project and read the documents. All the time it happens. So I'm like, well, put yourself in that. If it's not a big deal, tell your aunt, you know, the aunt you love, tell her she has to go in place of the person who was getting killed. So what I'm saying is that I think the people who like the death penalty, people who are in pro-death penalty, they should have to register when they get a driver's license, when you do your taxes, any type of state, federal form. Check that box, like if you're an organ donor. You know, check the box, because that's what you believe in. And you always say, well, you know, that's the system we have, and sometimes mistakes happen, because that's what they say. I've been asking people for decades about this. It's not like I just started asking people about this. So what I say is, you have a lottery. Then there's three slots. You got the one slot for the convicted person who has a very highly contested case. You know, not just one that's cut and dry, even though I still don't believe in that, but I'm trying to have a compromise here. The other slot is for the executioner, who will be a civilian. And the third slot is for the replacement, since these folks really believe in that. So there's a lottery. And when your number comes up and it matches the person who's about to go to death in your state or commonwealth, that's, you know, you get replaced. Since that, you know, you believe in the system, that's what you believe in. And see how long that shit lasts then. Because this is absolutely insane for a group of human beings to sit around and say, well, you know, you got to go to death. That, to me, that's just absolutely
well. And you know, there's a contingent of people for whom, probably guilty is good enough.
That's bullshit. That's what I'm saying. Look, let's look at two high profile cases that, in essence, they were a death penalty. Let's look at
one of the guys they want to kill in Arkansas had defense counsel who was, I don't mean, you know, a couple of martinis after lunch buzzed. I mean stumbling around hopelessly drunk.
Hopelessly drunk. And kept the same evidence. He kept saying, it's like he should have been arrested for public disorderly conduct if he was just on the street.
Yeah.
That's what you mean, right?
Yeah.
Now, right. So there's, you know, this happens all the time. And at the same time, you got that young kid in Texas, when was this, back in the around the turn of the century, who got influenza with his defense?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
And it wasn't like he did this once. He was always getting drunk and fucking shit up. Fucking shit up, left and right. Killed people. And it wasn't his first time. But you see, it's all about resources. So I don't know what it's going to take. But if that was you, I mean, if you've ever been wrongly accused or wrongly convicted of something, if you ever even spent any time in prison, jail, for something you didn't do, that will piss you the fuck off. You want to kill a motherfucker. You will. You will want to kill a motherfucker, and you got to get beyond that anger.
Well, and, you know, you remind me of a famous short story that used to be taught in a lot of high schools. You may have even read it at one point in time. It was published in 1948.
The Lottery?
The Lottery. By Shirley Jackson.
I forget the lady's name.
Shirley Jackson.
It's in the Norton Anthology. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Shirley Jackson, The Lottery. Lottery in June, con heavy soon, because Scholastic Films made a cheesy little film out of it. But it's really quite hard-hitting.
It scared the shit out of me the first time I read that. I think, you know, I don't know about you, it scared me. I was like, oh my God, why am I reading this shit?
And meanwhile...
How did you feel?
Oh, it was creepy. For a ninth grader? You know. But mm-hmm. but I also had good teachers who then led a discussion that, you know, where we talked about group dynamics. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, how group decision-making can lead to disastrous consequences. I'm sure they don't teach it anymore because it's not a far trip down the road once you get to talking about the lottery to realizing that what we're really talking about here is religion. Shirley Jackson is...
Well, it is Wednesday, isn't it?
Shirley Jackson is very careful. You know, it's just a lottery. She doesn't say about anything about anybody anywhere. I mean, it's very vague. But we're talking about a religious observance. Because if you don't have, you know, lottery in June, corn heavy soon. If you don't have the lottery, you can't have a good harvest. And this goes hand in hand with a story that by Ursula K. Le Guin that Dr. Bill talked about at some length a year or so ago, a very accessible short story called The People Who Walk Away from Amalas.
Amalas?
Yeah, O-M-E-L-A-S.
Okay.
And it's a philosophical inquiry. That would be worth if you've never read it, it's really worth your effort.
I'm gonna check
it's available online, it's easy, you know, done.
Yeah. It just bothers me. And then they're going to, you know, I brought that up one night about, I'm like, well, why are you struggling to find drugs that kill people? It's like, we know what kills people. If that's your intention, if you're fucking serious, do it.
Yeah, just give them a hot dose with the carfentanil and be done with it, right?
Be done with it. We know that shit works quickly. I mean, so obviously your intention, you're not fucking serious. Back the fuck up. What the fuck is wrong with these people? You're not fucking serious. And carfentanil is cheap as a goddamn piece of dirt. They're not fucking serious. Yeah, though, we have to have this cocktail. No, you don't. Fuck that. It's easy to kill a motherfucker. This shit ain't fucking hard. They're a fucking bunch of pussies. You know, because a certain group of people think they're never going to get in trouble. It won't happen to them. Shit happens. Shit fucking happens. And it's easy to get in trouble, and it's hard to get out, and it takes resources. Believe me, that shit is no fucking joke. I take that shit fucking seriously. That's why I brought it up, man. This is bullshit. That is bullshit. And then you had that family members like, I don't know why it took so long. You got to get it done right.
We need some closure. We need some closure.
What is that going to fucking do for you? Your loved one is dead. So is that going to bring them back? No. He got what he... You know, that shit ain't easy, man. Look, that shit is not fucking easy. You know, you lock somebody up, that shit is not fucking easy. Being in prison is not easy.
Well, I tell you what, if you want to read... If you want to read probably the most cogent expression in opposition to the death penalty,
What you want is the dissenting opinion of Justice Harry Blackmun of February 22nd, 1994, in a case called Callins, C-A-L-L-I-N-S, versus Collins.
Collins, C-O-L-L-U-N-S?
C-O-L-L-I-N-S.
Oh, okay.
And he says, if you're not moved by this, you're unmovable. From this day forward, I no longer shall tinker with the machinery of death. For more than 20 years, I have endeavored, indeed I have struggled, along with the majority of this court, to develop procedural and substantive rules that would lend more than the mere appearance of fairness to the death penalty endeavor. Rather than continue to coddle the court's delusion that the desired level of fairness has been achieved and the need for regulation eviscerated, I feel morally and intellectually obligated simply to concede that the death penalty experiment has failed. It is virtually self-evident to me now that no combination of procedural rules or substantive regulations ever can save the death penalty from its inherent constitutional deficiencies. The basic question, does the system accurately and consistently determine which defendants deserve to die, cannot be answered in the affirmative. It is not simply that this court has allowed vague, aggravating circumstances to be employed, relevant mitigating evidence to be disregarded, and vital judicial review to be blocked. The problem is that the inevitability of factual, legal, and moral error gives us a system that we know must wrongly kill some defendants, a system that fails to deliver the fair, consistent, and reliable sentences of death required by the Constitution.
Mm.
That's powerful.
Mm. That spells it out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
This is like abortion in a way where people are just their heels are ground in to a certain way of thinking. And, you know, it doesn't take much. I mean, you find yourself in a bad situation, shit can happen. I'm like, sorry. But, you know, the public defenders, and public defenders don't have enough resources. And it's not even about the public defender. You can have a great attorney. It's just about situational things. Unless you get caught up in the system, you don't understand. It's all strange. It has nothing. Once this stuff starts to spin out, it's not even about guilty or innocent. It's about process. Because the judge can decide, well, what is evidence, what is not. And it's just one piece of crucial evidence. For instance, in Trayvon's case, all right, I'll never forget. I mean, I was really on that. Those two detectives, it was a male and a female. And they're interviewing Zimmerman. And they said, well, and the female detective said to Zimmerman, so you were scared, right? And he said, yeah, I was scared. But you were in your truck, right? Yeah, I was in my truck. And you had your gun. Yeah, I had my gun. So why did you get out and follow that young man if you were scared and you had a gun? Now, I fought the defense with Krama, whatever his name was. That is the case right there. Why are you going to follow? If you're scared, you already called the police. You don't want to be cop. Sit the fuck in your truck. You did what you had to do. You're not a cop. Then, in that case, the case in Missouri, we come to find out, number one, that the prosecutors, as usual, you know, they rigged the jury. And these jurors come out later on and say, well, he was bound to do something wrong down the road anyway.
Yeah, pre-crime.
What the fuck is that? Right. This is not Minority Report. Fuck that. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time, man.
Oh,
everybody hopes you feel better.
It's always a pleasure, Todd. It's always a pleasure. And you know what? A lot of people get a kick out of our food porn discussions. And I'm glad that they do. And sometimes we got to get serious, but sometimes we Sometimes we keep it, you know, a little bit light, and that's healthy, especially in the context of all the awful shit that we talk about here. That's healthy. And all I want to know is when you finally get your first pack of Kaneka. That's all I want to know.
You know, I was over here today, and I was about to walk in Publix. I had dropped the person off at the doctor. I went to Trader Joe's first, and it's down the street from the Publix. And the phone rings. I'm ready. I have not forgotten. I'm telling you, I have not.
It's going to be a great day.
I'm looking forward to it. Hey, best to you and yours, man.
All right, you take care, Todd. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Todd down in South Carolina, Stan. Note coming in from Steve in China. Sugaring the pill. Archer Daniels Midland. They produce a dangerous toxin that most other people call high fructose corn syrup. They're also responsible for producing a diabetes pandemic that tracks perfectly with the use of corn sweetener in just about everything the average person puts on the table. Because it's a dangerous drug. And three generations of consumers are addicted to it. Especially the lower classes, who are forced to eat processed garbage instead of food. Because, like any other fuel, it is intended to run the machine until it stops and dies. Cute logo, though. A shiny green leaf. Just like Mother Nature. And you know what a mother she can be. Yeah, as the Parquet commercial used to say, was it Parquet? It's not nice to fool Mother Nature. Oh no, it's not. Not at all. Thanks going out to Glenn. Hey, Glenn, thank you very kindly, my friend. Thank you. We are now down to $153.33 to go. In finishing off fundraising, but $153.33 to finish off the evening. If we don't take a big chunk out of that, and thanks to everybody who has, then it'll be $353.33 tomorrow, depending on what happens with the overnight crew. So, yeah, if you want to help, the help is much appreciated. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, David. And thank you, Janice. Thank you, Reggie. And thank you to Andy. You know, when you hear these names and you hear these thanks go out, just remember, these are the folks, each and every night, these are the folks who keep the horn going. Because, really, all kidding aside, the limousine liberals aren't helping. And George Soros is nowhere to be found. I mentioned George Soros because if you recall our conversation with Arnold last night, you may recall a discussion of the direct action taken at the Heritage Foundation. And what a beautiful thing that must have been. Taking the protest to the belly of the beast. And you know how we know that it was effective? Because of the stuck pig squealing engaged in on Twitter by the Heritage Foundation. At Heritage is their Twitter handle. And, oh, they got a bunch of shit for their pissing and moaning and whining. Oh, yes, indeed.
It was beautiful. Heritage Foundation will not be intimidated by paid protesters sent to try to intimidate us by George Soros.
You know, it takes a lot of gall to say that when you get all your money from the NRA and the fucking Koch brothers, right? That further proof that the on prayer meeting Wednesday of the absence of a justice wielding deity somewhere up in the sky, because the minute whoever tweeted that got done and hit send, a lightning bolt just would have gone zit. Just for the sheer hypocrisy of saying George Soros paid the protesters. Oh, what? The monthly check from the Koch brothers cleared? Kill. Yeah. Thank you to Steve and Karen and little Cletus. Cletus is a good girl. She's a very good, she was a very patient girl. Yes, she was. And little Twiggy. Thank you very kindly. So we are now down to 133.33. Right? Yeah, 133.33. Which means tomorrow would be 333.33. And that's just too a little too numerological for my taste, but that's how it goes. But kudos to everybody who participated in that action at the headquarters of everything that is wrong with America. The Heritage Foundation. You scored. You made them wet themselves. You made them piss and moan about George Soros. Poor your babies. Mm-hmm. Sending out thanks to Glenn. Glenn replies, subject line, work. Welcome, Bob. I just love the show, and I just got back from Ohio where I was sampling the water around an old herbicide plant. That there is Trump country. Ain't that the truth? You've said a mouthful, Glenn. All right, so Thorn in the Side Thursday will be here in about 21 hours or so before we know it. I hope you'll be here with us. Join in, take part in the madcap, merry, wacky zaniness. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thank you to everybody who financially keeps the horn going. You are all that does keep the horn going. Each and every one of you, all month long, every night. Our subscribers, our nightly contributors, thank you, one and all. You create independent progressive media every time. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening going out to Midweek Utility Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Horn chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan, who hurried to get into his moderating chair. Thank you, Steve. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.